as we get more and more Americans immunized, more and more people around the world immunized, that's what's going to break the back of the pandemic.
COVID vaccine distribution expands. It's Monday, December 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. You'll find us online on VOA Asia Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Also ahead, an Aussie home virus test is approved. International migrants face extra virus pressures. Huge hacking, jailed journalists, and the antidote. In the movies, that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States is expanding its rollout of the newly approved COVID-19 vaccine to hundreds of distribution centers, where thousands of healthcare workers are expected to be vaccinated. We hear more from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
Nearly 1,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine have arrived at Indiana University Health Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis. Hospital Pharmacy Director Tay Trujillo.
It's exciting. I mean, this is a light at the end of the tunnel.
But getting people vaccinated is challenging, says Trujillo.
In the environment that we're in right now, with COVID surge, increased patient volumes, staff being tired, and then saying, oh, by the way, we need to add this on, that's the challenge. Everyone's plate is very full, and then we need to make sure this happens and it happens, you know, correctly. And with the Pfizer product having a very limited, room temperature duration, the timing is kind of crucial.
Dr. Stephen Rumpf was one of the first at the hospital to get inoculated.
It has been a long 9 months, is what it's been. You know, it's been a privilege and an honor to be on the front line and take care of people.
COVID-19 has killed more than 310,000 people in the United States and infected more than 17 million, overwhelming the healthcare system, inflicting economic pain, and putting millions out of work. The vaccine is the first step toward recovery, say medical experts.
Right. So thrilled with how effective this vaccine is and how safe it is. And I think as we get more and more Americans immunized, more and more people around the world immunized, that's what's going to break the back of the pandemic.
But there have been a few cases of allergic reactions to the vaccine, including some in Britain and one Thursday in Alaska.
The vaccine itself will expire.
There are also difficulties involved in distributing the vaccine in remote areas worldwide because of the need to keep the doses in ultra-cold temperatures. Dr. Barak Kazaz, a supply chain expert, explains.
If you're going to a metropolitan city in, say, in Africa, the type of logistical arrangement that we make for the U.S. market is no different. However, for remote places, that might be quite challenging. And we might have to use, for example, drone technologies to deliver in such short periods of time these vaccines.
Meanwhile, on Thursday, the number of cases worldwide has exceeded 74.6 million, according to a tally by Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
As the vaccine rollout expands, so does our coverage. You can read more on our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, find us on Facebook, and of course, stop by our website. That's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you make a visit to voanews.com. India crosses 10 million mark as infections slow. 1 year on, Wuhan residents share lockdown memories and hopes for 2021. Rare UN-Taliban agreement to set up 4,000 schools in insurgent-held Afghan territory. Nepal Prime Minister seeks snap election after losing party support. Halal status of COVID-19 vaccine worries Muslims. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more are online at Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today. a rapid over-the-counter COVID-19 test developed by the Australian company Illume has been given emergency approval in the United States. It will be America's first over-the-counter testing technology that does not require any laboratory involvement to process a result. It uses a nasal swab and then screens the sample through an analyzer connected to a smartphone, delivering results in about 20 minutes. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us Illume's product is the first at-home coronavirus test that does not require a prescription in the United States.
The FDA said the technology would ease the burden on laboratories and test supplies and allow Americans to be screened for the virus from the safety of their homes. The test has been developed by Illume, a firm based in Brisbane, Australia. The company hopes to manufacture up to 200,000 kits each day by March. The first consignment is expected to be delivered next month. Illume founder and chief executive Sean Parsons, a former emergency and intensive care physician, says the self-test will help reduce the spread of COVID-19.
It's new technology that we created here in Brisbane over a long time, and it's terrific to see this product being approved by the FDA in these tumultuous times to help respond to coronavirus.
The technology, however, is unlikely to be used in Australia. Dr. Paul Kelly is the acting chief medical officer.
Here in Australia, we don't have that emergency that they have in the US. The other thing that's different here in Australia is we have a very large and deliberately expanded laboratory network using the gold standard of PCR testing. We have plenty of capacity there.
Australia has mostly contained COVID-19. It's recorded about 28,000 infections since the pandemic began, and 908 people have died. But after months of relative calm and low case numbers, residents in parts of Australia's biggest city have been urged Thursday to stay at home for at least 3 days because of a cluster of new infections. Other states are imposing restrictions on travellers from Sydney's Northern Beaches region, where the new outbreak is centred. Authorities are racing to identify the source of the infections. Sophisticated contact tracing has been a key part in Australia's coronavirus strategy. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Stay tuned in just a moment on VOA, a huge computer hack. Happening now in Asia, voters in Thailand cast ballots nationwide Sunday in provincial elections, marking the first test of democracy since a general election last year that drew accusations of manipulation and helped spawn months of youth protests. Polling officials reported a steady turnout despite Thailand's coronavirus surge. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a new week together on VOA Asia. The coronavirus pandemic has affected people worldwide, including migrants, many of whom who have gotten ill, lost jobs, or been stranded in destination countries. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir spoke with the head of the UN's Migration Agency about their predicament.
There are about 272 million migrants worldwide. A little less than half of them are women. The UN considers a migrant to be anyone who changes their country regardless of the reason, but most move to seek economic improvement. According to the IOM, India has the largest number of migrants living abroad, more than 17 million. The United States remains the top destination country, home to more than 50 million migrants. Some 3 million migrants have been stranded by COVID-19 lockdowns and border closures, but the virus has not stopped the criminals who exploit those seeking to reach new countries.
There are four times more arrivals in Italy this year through the Mediterranean, one of the most dangerous routes, than last year. Or if you look to the Gulf of Aden, there are 130,000 people who are crossing the Gulf both ways to reach the Gulf countries, and they did not stop because of the pandemic.
More than 3,100 migrants have died trying to reach destination countries this year. Drowning is the most common cause. As some rich nations approve COVID-19 vaccines and begin vaccinating their populations, Vitorino says migrants must not be excluded.
It's the responsibility of governments to guarantee that all that are present in their own territory, whether they are nationals or non-nationals, migrants, irrespective of their legal status, have access to vaccines. Because in practical terms, the pandemic has shown us that nobody is safe until everyone is safe.
International Migrants Day is a time to recognize migrants' contributions to the countries they settle in and respect their right to seek a better life, says the IOM.
Migration is a natural phenomenon of human life. It has always existed and it will go on existing in our world.
Migrants are often thought of as being undocumented workers, but the vast majority are legally in destination countries. They work in all fields, from manual labor to specialties, including healthcare and technology. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Taiwan's Navy and Air Force were deployed Sunday as a Chinese aircraft carrier group led by the country's newest carrier sailed through the sensitive Taiwan Strait the day after a U.S. warship transited the same waterway. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, U.S. President Donald Trump is downplaying the severity of a massive cybersecurity breach by suspected Russian operatives that has exposed the networks of government agencies and private sector companies, contradicting the assertions of his Secretary of State and lawmakers briefed on the matter. After days of silence, Trump took to Twitter on Saturday for his first comments on the hack, which is thought to have impacted at least 18,000 customers of SolarWinds, a Texas-based software management company, including the Departments of Energy, Treasury and Commerce, as well as state and local governments. But unlike intelligence officials and lawmakers, who warned the damage from the breach is ongoing, the president said everything is well under control. Trump also cast doubt on comments late Friday by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who said it appears Russia was responsible. He also suggested the cyber breach may have impacted November's presidential election, which he lost to former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden. U.S. intelligence and cybersecurity agencies have yet to make a formal attribution for the hack, which they say was underway at least as early as March. In late November of 2020, hackers took over the Baltimore County Public School System in Maryland and forced that nation's 25th largest school district to shut down for 3 days. But what happened to the public school system in Baltimore was not an isolated case, as Valentina Veseliva reports this story narrated by Anna Rice.
Like millions of kids in the U.S., Baltimore student Gosha Kunstler is learning via laptop this year. On any given day, it usually takes about 20 seconds to log on. But in late November, something went wrong.
I tried to log in, but nothing seemed to work. So I called a friend of mine and asked what was happening, and he told me that the system had been hacked.
And it wasn't just Gosha's school. Hackers had infiltrated the whole Baltimore County public school system. They stole the children's names, their parents' names, addresses, family information and contacts, and demanded the school system pay a ransom to get them back. In response, Baltimore County cut off internet access for the whole Baltimore County public school system, leaving over 115,000 school children without classes and parents in the dark.
Usually the school sends us emails if something happens. There are urgent messages on the school website. So I was surprised this time there was nothing. We were in a vacuum of sorts. My kid got a call from school, and that was it. I even thought it was a prank. Then a couple of hours later, my daughter's teacher called and explained they had to call because emails don't work and they are not allowed to use computers.
For more than 3 days, the systems remained blocked. Like all of his classmates, Gosha was not allowed to use school-issued computers, and there were no classes for a week. School is back in virtual session, but parents still can't check their children's grades. And authorities have no idea what the hackers may have done with all the data they stole.
Thank God we didn't provide any financial information there, like our credit cards. The only data hackers could get was our names, addresses, and the number of children.
Local police and FBI are still trying to determine the identity of the hackers. But what happened in Baltimore is becoming increasingly common. Over 36 hacking attacks have been launched against schools since the start of the pandemic. In September, a similar attack took place in Miami-Dade County. Students could not access their virtual classrooms for days because of a 16-year-old hacker who was later arrested. Also in September, a school in Hartford, Connecticut, had to cancel their first school day of the year as a result of a cyber attack. More than 200 city servers were affected.
The major attacks that are really problematic are the ones that basically interrupt the entire system to the point that the school district has to shut down entirely. And then two things can happen there. They can ask for ransom in order to be able to free up the system, or what we're seeing more of nowadays is get access to critical information that the hackers then say they will make public unless the school district pays up.
Experts say in some cases school systems are vulnerable because they are older systems and easier to breach. They say updating those systems is something that should be brought up on a national level. For Valentina Vasilova in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, Beijing has accused the United States of bullying after Washington announced export controls on dozens of Chinese firms over alleged ties to China's military. The announcement, in the final weeks of President Donald Trump's term, comes after relations between Washington and Beijing soured under his administration, which saw the United States start a trade war with China and expand its list of sanctioned entities to a few hundred Chinese companies and subsidiaries. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said the designations, which restrict U.S. companies' abilities to do business with the firms, are over an array of charges, including human rights abuses and the activities of the Chinese military, especially in the South China Sea, as well as theft of U.S. technology. Meanwhile, the number of journalists being jailed for their work has hit a record high in 2020, with 274 imprisoned globally. The annual survey by Press Freedom Organization Committee to Protect Journalists lists China, Turkey, and Egypt as the worst jailers. Unrest in Belarus and Ethiopia led to a surge in arrests, and protests in the United States also resulted in an unprecedented number of arrests. VOA's Press Freedom editor Jessica Jarit has more.
As details of a deadly new virus emerged in China, local journalists took to social media to report on it. In response, Beijing jailed them. Similar crackdowns on coverage contributed to a record 274 journalists in jail globally in 2020, data by the Committee to Protect Journalists shows.
It is the worst year on record for imprisonments, 274, because of primarily two reasons. One is the reaction to the global health pandemic, which has been met by the increased use of false news charges or fake news charges against journalists in retaliation for their independent reporting, and by a crackdown related to protests.
The pandemic adds urgency to the calls for justice for those detained. At least two died of COVID-19 in custody, and the family of a third, Kyrgyz journalist Azimjan Askarov, believe he also died from the virus.
In a global health pandemic like COVID-19, a prison sentence for journalism could amount to a death sentence for journalism because you can't socially distance. They don't have access to personal protective equipment. And of course, you know, prisons are vectors of infections.
The committee's data acts as a snapshot of journalists in jail on December 1st, but many more were detained, then freed in 2020. In the US, more than 117 were briefly detained or arrested covering protests over racial injustice or related to the presidential election. Several still face charges.
Protests have always been an incredibly dangerous place for journalists compared to other beats. And really, it began when George Floyd died May 25th in Minneapolis, Minnesota. By May 26th, we saw our first assault of a journalist covering national protests. And by May 29th, the first arrest of a journalist. In all of 2020, we've documented 117 journalists arrested or detained.
Protests in Belarus led to an uptick in arrests, with 10 detained since the contested re-election of President Alexander Lukashenko. In Ethiopia, which more recently had shown signs of a more promising press freedom record, several were detained over coverage of unrest in the Tigray region.
Does Belarus and Ethiopia really want to join China, Turkey, Egypt, Saudi Arabia on the list of countries that imprison journalists in retaliation for their work? I would certainly hope not.
In a year when access to independent news is more important than ever, the record number of journalists detained for their reporting is a concerning trend. Jessica Jarit, VOA News.
The Antidote, a documentary by filmmakers Kahane Cooperman and John Hoffman, offers stories about acts of kindness in communities across America. The filmmakers tell VOA's Penelope Palou that their film reflects Americans' collective humanity and empathy.
Kindness is the word that inspired Emmy Award-winning filmmakers Kahane Cooperman and John Hoffman to make The Antidote. The documentary focuses on how American communities across the country are coming together in times of need.
My name is O'Connell. I'm Dr. O'Connell. What do you need? Anything?
I need mental health.
Dr. James O'Connell, founder of Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, goes out in the streets to treat homeless people.
I'm Russell. I work here at the college. Tell me your name again.
In Amarillo, Texas, Russell Laurie Hart, president of Amarillo College, helps underprivileged students manage their personal lives, thrive academically, and escape generational poverty. At Peter Johansson High School in Modesto, California, Sherry McIntyre teaches a class about religious tolerance and the diversity of faith in America.
We need to protect the rights of the smallest minority, because in doing that, we're protecting our own rights. We can't get too comfortable. We have to stand up for each other.
The stories go on and on.
We came up with six questions that completely informed our creative process, which are: how do we raise our children? How do we teach our children? How do we take care of the sick and the dying? How do we live and work together? How do we welcome the stranger? And how do we lead?
Hoffman says the film was made as a counterpoint to the growing political and social divisions in America.
Those stories are all examples of working to right these systemic wrongs that we call fundamental unkindnesses.
It's, you know, fundamentally unkind to not have a safe place to sleep, fundamentally unkind to not have access to health care. Racism is fundamentally unkind. Homophobia is fundamentally unkind. Sexism is fundamentally unkind.
Cooperman says that although the film was made just before the country was ensnarled in the grip of the pandemic, it is relevant today.
More relevant, perhaps, than when we even started. Certainly with COVID, it was about communities coming together.
Such as how communities in Anchorage, Alaska are welcoming African refugees, or how elderly communities in Portland, Oregon are caring for children in foster care. The filmmakers hope the documentary inspires people to reach out to one another and to feed the force of good rather than fan the flames of hatred and divisiveness. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia and under that same name on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring this program to you every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.